It's time for The Citizen Lobbyist, a discussion of local, borough, and state politics featuring Terry Snyder and Mike Malefsky.
Well, it's my great pleasure to welcome into the studio today the Citizen Lobbyist. Welcome, Citizen Lobbyist.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I am good. Well, I was over at one meeting on Tuesday. You were at what sounds in some ways to be a more exciting piece of work. I'm just going to say this, that the City of Palmer City Council passed a budget for 2019. It's done. They have done their major work for the year. They did a few other things, but basically that was their main focus. They stayed with it, and it passed unanimously. Let us move on to the joint school board borough assembly meeting.
Can I just backtrack for a second? They must have approved the community grant for Special Santa.
Yes, they did.
Good, for $2,500. That's a very worthwhile.
I can hang there for a little bit and say, there was a discussion, not about the merits of the Special Santa grant, but about, once again, something that has come up over and over again. We both have seen this, heard this.
Yep.
And that is how to set up a process so that monies that are allocated into a budget item for this kind of thing is applied for, those monies are applied for and then used. And it isn't a case of, well, here's another one, very worthwhile thing. We can move some money into this account from some other places, scrimp here, do a little there, et cetera.
Right.
And that feels, and is probably rightly felt, to be not a good way to do this. So solutions to it, not yet. We'll see what happens.
I thought that they had a procedure pretty much adopted at one point where people had to apply and there had to be an after-action report and that didn't really
happen. Anyone who has kids know, and I'm not equating organizations that are doing good work with children, but anyone knows, has experienced perhaps in their own family this kind of thing. Yes, I know this is my allowance, or this is what I earned by doing that work. There's this one thing here that really is valuable. Yes, everyone agrees it is. What do you do? Well, you figure out some way to do it, because just saying no is probably not going to work. So
there must not be – the City of Palmer may not be the only city in the country that faces this. There probably is – a program out there, a template that they could do and copy, because it does seem to take a fair amount of time at just about every time it comes up. And it's always sort of the same thing. We support it, but or the amount is quabbled over, or that sort of thing. So I think it would be a really good goal for the council this year to say, does it take a work session? Does it take a little bit of conversation to make it, to manage everybody's expectations, not only those that apply, but those who have done it in the past, to get some input, and much like what they have done with the depot on prioritizing who gets to use it and that sort of thing. So I think it's something worthwhile if any of them are listening to this.
There are many, many organizations that are grant or granting organizations, and they basically say, apply, and by this date, we will go through them, make our decision, and then come back next year. I think that may be ultimately the solution places have found. The real question is being able to say, establish that this is the protocol, that's what we do, and we would love to hear about your project. In order for us to do business, we need it within this time frame.
Right. And there are such things, having worked for nonprofits for a while, there are rapid response requests under a certain amount. So we don't want to, turn away opportunities for the City of Palmer, but you have to put the guide rails along that and say, well, we have a rapid response. This is the amount of money all we can do this year. You can apply for one of those. It's pretty clear cut. But if we want to do something larger, then these are the guidelines. So, yeah, lots to look in there. Maybe that's something the Economic Development Board can take up, make some recommendations, and come back to the council. But it sure is something they dance with a lot, Mike. Just an observation.
All right, moving on to the school board and assembly. You had both of them gathered together.
Well, this happens a few times a year, Mike. They did have a joint assembly and borough meeting. The only person that was not in attendance was from the school board. Yvonne Ruth from the Big Lake area was not there, and they acknowledged that. The mayor was there. The manager was there. Lots of people from the school board, a lot of people. They combined a couple things on the agenda. One had to do, first of all, they took off the big thing, a piece of assembly business. We know from going to these things, Mike, that even though they are a joint assembly school board meeting, oftentimes there are things on the agenda just for the borough assembly members to vote on. It's something that's held over, that is time sensitive. Oftentimes it comes at the end of the meeting. This one, for some reason, came at the beginning of the meeting. And it's not a new subject. It was actually a piece of legislation. It was a new subject because it was a new introduction of a resolution. But it had to do with a subject that was voted on at the last meeting, having to do for a waiver of individual landfill fees, much like Anchorage had done after the earthquake, knowing that it was a phenomenal event in the lives of residents. Anchorage passed a certain amount of time that people could take their destruction from on their property just for that purpose and go to the landfill. And it came to the assembly at a special meeting, actually, while I was out of town, Mike, and was defeated. They were short an assembly member. Mr. Beck was not there, could not call in. But again, it was defeated by two assembly members, assembly member Sumner and assembly member McKee. And so it was brought back this time and sponsored not only by the original sponsor, Mr. Mayfield, but also by Ted Leonard, was another name on assembly members Bovey from the Talkeetna area, Leonard and Mayfield were all on the resolution. Pretty much same resolution before to allow free use of the landfill for getting rid of things a result of the earthquake until December 16th. The two objections came again from George McKee, Assemblymember George McKee. He just was not happy with it at all. He didn't find any reason for it. And then it's kind of a complicated thing that a lot of people don't understand. But the landfill is what the borough calls an enterprise enterprise fund, and which means that basically the fees support it. We don't levy a part of the borough general fund to pay for that. It's actually the fees are supposed to support it. And the borough has run in the red on that for a number of years, mostly due to the fact, my own observation, that prior assemblies didn't want to raise any fees. And every time we have to expand the landfill, and being the largest, fastest growing area of the Alaska, there's been a need to do that. And so they haven't kept up with the costs along the way. So it has operated in the red, which is okay to do, but it's something that really gnaws on Mr. McKee, and he thought no reason to do that again, to give anything away because of the red ink on there. There was a lot of talk about that. Mr. Sumner, to his credit, who is also a dissenting vote, introduced two amendments that they took up prior to voting on it. One had to do with allowing only people that had filed with the borough as having damage and wanting some reimbursement perhaps from the FEMA money that perhaps we will be experiencing. And also they're able to claim some things on their income tax, I think. I haven't followed that closely, Mike, but that is something that the borough is facilitating with people that have a huge amount of damage. Or not really huge. You can file. Anybody can file. There was an article in the ADN about it this morning. And a lot of people, it was a weird earthquake. Some people had no damage, and some people had significant damage to their property and belongings. So he wanted to limit it to those people. The other part of the amendment is he thought instead of even allowing that it should just be a benevolent fund, that Mr. Mayfield, who sponsored it, and other members of the assembly and anybody in the borough could go and just donate to the assembly to cover those costs. To the assembly, to the landfill to cover those costs. Mr. Leonard was the first that spoke up to that, and he said he would not support either of those amendments. He thought that this was the time. First of all, those would be hard to follow and to enforce, and that he had he thought that this was something that, although he commended Mr. Sumner for bringing it forward and bringing a solution there, that that the borough shouldn't be running a charity. What they have to do is they have to take care of the people that are affected by these sort of things, and that they have a responsibility, and the citizens have a right to.
Was there any estimate ever of a discussion of the likely loss of revenue, the dollar amount?
Well, that came up oddly after the assembly voted on it again, and that Mr. Sumner and Mr. McKee were the dissenting votes on it, so it did pass. Mr. Leonard did instruct the manager to bring back to a future assembly meeting what the costs are going to be.
Okay.
And it's going to be a really no word really of how they're going to track that. Are they going to poll people? Are they going to look at what's in there? You know, it's kind of the honor system. I think that the assembly felt that they had faith in the citizens that they weren't going to abuse it. Mr. Sumner pointed to the fact that he had heard from some contractors that said, hey, this will be great for me. I'll just go get rid of all my waste during that time. He is a contractor, too. I mean, they're just hoping that that doesn't happen. And I don't know, maybe it'll come down to enforcement at the landfill.
I thought
only a week. It's only till the 16th. So.
Right. It starts on the 12th goes from there.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that what the borough website listed was that you couldn't be a contractor and do this.
Yeah, that's what it says.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's it's about, you know, they made it pretty clear cut who was, you know, supposed to be doing it, and that tried to put as many side rails, I think, as they could on it to do it for this one-time event. Although it wasn't a one-time, I think it was interesting that Mr. Sykes brought up that they had provided dumpsters over at Willowaw when the people of the Willowaw neighborhood wanted to clean up there and didn't particularly charge anybody, but they provided a couple of dumpsters. Mr. Sykes brought up the fact that up in Sutton, when they had done a big cleanup up there, that the borough helped facilitate that, and that he felt that, you know, if they didn't allow it to go into the landfill, that it would just end up in the lakes or the water streams in the forest, and we'd end up paying for it anyway. So one way or the other, it was going to, you know, it was going to come up. So that took a significant amount of time at the beginning of the meeting to get that out of the way.
And this was a joint meeting.
It was a joint meeting, and again, it was just assembly business that had to be dealt with, time sensitive. Why it wasn't at the bottom of the agenda, as normally they usually dismiss the assembly. Although I was talking to an unnamed member of the assembly after and said he was a bit embarrassed that it got sort of rowdy during that period and robust conversation between assembly members. And you know what? That's what happens in families, and that maybe school board members should see that it's not all roses sometimes to sit on the assembly and do those things. So. Having said that, that was over. So they started off with putting two things together that had been asked, one requested by the school board and one, I think, requested by Assemblymember Leonard, having to do with the budget, having a preliminary discussion on that. And Mr. Leonard was really keen on finding out what their direction was for future funding and for capital projects. So we'll get to that in a second. They started off by going through the budget and talking about the scenarios that they've come up with. It's very preliminary at this point. The school board hasn't even voted on anything. They've been a little distracted, as you may note, but Mr. Phelps was there, did have a handout that talked about where they're at. They're a few kiddos down than their projection, which will affect a little bit what they get
in revenues.
But
somewhere around 100, as I remember.
Right, right, and that they have kind of looked at the legislature and portrayed sort of a worst-case scenario. If they don't get the expected amount of revenue that the state normally gives them or cuts that amount, there's been some noise, certainly during the election season, about cutting the education budget. They gave sort of a medium-of-the-road budget scenario if all things sort of go as planned, where they'll be, and then the best case scenario. So Mr. Phelps went over that in some detail without getting too far down in the woods. Wasn't a lot of conversation about it. Surprisingly, he fielded just a few questions, and I think they were satisfied at this point, still not knowing that we won't really know until the legislature is in session what that intent of that body is, nor until they kind of go by their own school board. They have a new school board member this year, and they have an agreement with the borough from last year about where funding is, 6.2 mils, I think, in right. education, which will be in effect for 5 years. So they tackled that. Then when they did have an update on their school district infrastructure, kind of they gave a really nice handout, Mr. Brown did, about what's sort of on their CIP list, what they had would be going to the legislature if they do get one-time money for things, and also money that there's a lot of talk about remaining funds and what they would do with remaining funds and that sort of thing. So he kind of walked them through that handout that was there and available. And then when it got to the conversation having to do with funding for bonds or future bonds, Mr. Leonard was a little, I think he handled it really quite beautifully, but concerned that the resolution had been passed by the Assembly some time ago, actually before the election, having to do with the purchase, certificates of participation to purchase existing buildings that charter schools are in. One of them is the Mat-Su Central, which is actually their biggest school, the correspondence school, that is sort of growing out of their seams there, and their lease is getting ready to expire. That was one of them. Another one was they talked about building a bus barn so they could have more competitive bidding when it came to transportation. But I think the superintendent was very frank in saying that they had listened to the citizens, felt the pushback that this was maybe not the method to do these things. They had not gone to the school board. They hadn't presented the resolution ever to the Assembly, but they had listened to the citizenry and decided it needed more work. They are going to be working with the school board. They may come to the Assembly and talk about a school bond next year. It has been recommended that a lot of these facilities that they rent, that would be better to own them. The cost of rent exceeds the cost of the building. And they also... what it has done is it brought the owner to the Mat-Su Central School building a little more to the table, having to do with their negotiation for a lease there that is soon to be up. So a lot of things up in the air, but I think that what I liked about the Superintendent Goyo is she owned it. She owned it and said maybe that was the best approach that we thought at that time. There's been some time it was time sensitive to us because we had a major lease. I want to say that lease is some $2 million. Not that lease, but the district pays about $2 million to lease buildings from private citizens or corporations or wherever the schools are. And they think it's a good thing to be able to own property. Most people do think they do better when they own their own property, control their fate a little more than the other way.
Of course, this is reminding people that we talk about owning your property. The school district property in terms of school is really owned by the borough.
Right, right. So, but still, they lease the buildings and the borough doesn't charge, it would just work out to be better,
using
financial.
Obviously, the borough-owned buildings doesn't require a lease arrangement. But what it does require is the upfront monies available through bonds, et cetera, to build or obtain these.
Right. But she did say another thing that hadn't come up in the prior discussions, Mike, is that the interest on a bond would be less than an interest on a certificate of participation, both of which the borough would actually be on the hook for. So that was another reason to think about a school bond. And the school bond has not been passed in 5 years, years now. And so it is, they certainly could do it. I think we may be looking also a little bit further down the road here, what happens with Houston Middle School. That was the most damaged of the buildings. It hasn't got a complete assessment yet. They're working. It is, should be said at this point, and we go there a little bit more about the earthquake, that the School district did have $25 million worth of insurance, and they hold a policy with the borough. This is one of the things they work with the borough on, is that the policy is a joint policy with the school board that covers, because the most of the facilities are school buildings.
Okay.
It's negotiated in concurrence with the two bodies to get the best cost for everything, and 85% of the premium is paid by the school district out of their budget, because they have most of the buildings that are covered and the rest are the roads. So they'll be working out that settlement. Ms. Goya did say that the city of Anchorage has no earthquake insurance for their schools that she's aware of. So they felt quite lucky that they did have this insurance policy that will pay for some things. But when it comes to replacement for an entire school, as you and I know, Mike, that kind of builds one elementary school, as I remember, around $23-24 million. So, but there is still question out there what more FEMA money will come out, what other money from the state might come out to do repairs on damages of earthquake. What they were really celebrating was the fact that almost everybody's back in school. They've had to delay the opening of Colony with some more inspections and more work that needs to be done. But I think she said almost 90% of the schools were up now, which Houston Middle School is going to be moving into the high school.
Yeah, those students have actually already begun going.
And the borough is
going
to start moving over some available portables that lucky enough that the school district still had, and they will pay for that to move them over. And then there'll be a lot of screening going around to get kids settled in there. They were very grateful, as probably most people are, that it's close to the school break for Christmas, and so that they will be able to do a lot of that work while kiddos are off with their Christmas break, and things will be a little more settled after that. A lot of the conversation, there was one other point, there was just something Mr. Sykes put on the agenda having to do with safe water in school. Of course, we were all people were very worried having to boil water and that sort of thing after the earthquake. It wasn't so much about that, because they have pretty much worked with the DEC and cleared up and tested all of the water. They put everybody on boil at all the schools on until they had everything tested, and with 47 some schools, that's a big leap to get everything tested. But his concern was mostly about the water at Glacier View, that he had been up there and said that it smells horrid, it is horrid, and that was before the earthquake, and he just wanted some reassurance what was going on up there. And she said it's been tested over and over. The quality of it is fine. It's just the way it is up there in Glacier View. He had some conversation with her about maybe the opportunity to dig another well. But at this point, they're supplying bottled water fresh water just for drinking up there. And she said it's only costing the school district $1,500 a year. So they could talk about a new well. But right now, it wasn't costing them very much to just bring in drinkable water.
Interesting.
So that, you know, there is some cost, probably $1,500. I'm not sure if that costs the cost of hauling it up there, disposing of the empty bottles and that sort of thing. But it was a good conversation. So then just more about the earthquake status. They went over that a lot and gave out a really good one-page handout of where they were on that. It's kind of a summary report on the facilities as a whole. And they were very thankful for the community support they'd received, of course, and the cooperation with the Public Works Department of the borough, Capital Projects, who is really taking the lead on the worst of the damaged schools and getting them fixed, and mentioned several contractors that had really jumped up and opened things up that were kind of put to sleep for the season to help them get that done. We've all talked a lot about Vine Road, I'm sure, and the amazement that that's opened. Of course, those repairs are not done. They're just opened right now. So all in all, pretty good meeting. I was out of there by about 8 o'clock, Mike.
Well, very good.
Yep.
Very good. And of course, next week we have separate meetings. The Borough Assembly and the School Board both meet Tuesday and Wednesday, the last meetings of 2018.
Right. And they'll be all ready for a break. I will say there were some pretty tired-looking people there last night. The school district has been working around the clock, and I think Public Works has too. So I think everybody deserves a little break.
Great. Okay. Well, thank you, Citizen Lobbyist. We'll look forward to a discussion next week.
You've been listening to The Citizen Lobbyist, broadcast on Thursdays at 8 a.m. and repeated at 5 p.m. on Big Cabbage Radio in Palmer, Alaska. You can find the podcast at radiofreepalmer.org. The views and opinions of moderators and guests did not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, this station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions, please email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.